This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 4082 for Tuesday, the 26th of March, 2024. Today's show is entitled, No Swans at Swanston. It is hosted by Dave Morris and is about 45 minutes long. It carries an explicit flag. The summary is, Mr. X and Dave Morris bring you more chit-chat from Edinburgh.
Hello everybody, this is another Hacker Public Radio show, and today it's myself, Dave Morris, as you might recognise, and I have beside me...
Mr. X! Hi everybody, how you doing?
So, we're doing one of our famous, infamous recordings where we sit in my car, having had lunch, and we're up at the Pentland Hills in a different place. The place we used to go to, the Steading, seems to be changing hands and therefore closed. So, but we've got a nice golf course in front of us and some nice looking hills.
Beautiful view there, the Pentland. Lovely.
I've not seen the hills from this angle. So hopefully it's...
And the meal was nice, lovely.
The car park is full, but hopefully not overly busy. Okay, so we've got a few topics we're going to talk about, and I'm going to kick off, and I am going to start by talking about a couple of YouTube channels that I've been watching, because it's quite nice to share these things. And the first one is from a guy called Anton Petrov, and he talks about astronomy and science in particular, and he goes to quite a lot of depth, I think. So his show's not tremendously long, maybe up to half an hour, 20 minutes, an hour, but they're quite detailed. So the one I highlighted here is entitled Study Explains Dark Energy and Inflation as Parallel Universes Colliding.
Which is sounds a bit complex.
Not trivial at all.
So
this is astronomers finding out, trying to work out what the bizarre things of dark energy and why the universe apparently inflated from nothing to a huge thing in very small space of time. And they're saying maybe it's because there's lots of parallel universes and they bumped into one another, and then is the effect of that.
A bit mind-blowing, all that sort of stuff.
I came away from that thinking, wow, but I don't really understand. I'm sure that there might be a useful thing if you're interested in that sort of thing. Just to raise your awareness of stuff that's going on. The other channel is a guy who is making all sorts of wooden things out of junk. And his junk is mainly pallets and scrap wood that he picks up from skips and on the sides of roads and stuff.
Sounds a bit like my father-in-law.
There's quite a few.
He does that as well.
I've certainly made a fair number of things out of old pallets. But it's called Epic Upcycling. And he has arranged his episodes such that there's no speech. He doesn't ever say anything in them. He often writes interesting messages, but there's only the ambient sounds till you get to the end. When the final display of the product comes up, then there's some sort of background music comes in. And he did one recently that I've noted here, entitled A Treasure Chest of Secret Drawers Made from Pallets and Scrap. And these things, you would not know that they're made from scrap wood because he finishes them so beautifully and, varnishes them or waxes them or whatever. And they just look really nice. If you got a bit of spare time and you quite like sitting and relaxing and watching somebody making a thing, it's actually quite good. It's a nice relaxing thing to look at.
I might take a look at some of that. I've got no woodworking skills at all, but it's such a great use of a material like that.
He seems to have an enormous supply of pallets that he's rescued and broken down.
I'm sure I remember somebody saying, I came across somebody saying something about, how we're going to manage post wood, because the idea is that, although you think, you can just regrow wood, but we're chewing through it literally quicker than it can be grown, and at some point we're going to run out of wood, you just can't believe that. It's just, to reuse that's so good.
It's just lovely to see things being properly recycled and in a skillful way.
Yeah,
and his techniques for doing it are fascinating, if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I think I'll have a look at that one. That sounds interesting. Yeah.
Okay, so that's my YouTube thing. So, what do you think?
Yeah, so is it over to me, is it?
It feels like
not very much has happened since we last talked. I think the terrible weather, it's been just rubbish here in Bonnie, Scotland, as we would say here. I think it's been sort of bad weather all over the place. But what have I got here now? There's a big, large tree fell down in the local park, and both my parents' houses have sustained damages with fences down and roof tiles moved. Surprisingly, I mean, we're quite high up. We're higher up than the two parents, and at one point it felt like the house was coming down. It was just creaking and groaning a bit, you know. But surprisingly, I mean, I've had a look, and I can't see even a single tile out of place, so I guess it must be quite well put together. But we're lucky, I suppose, really. And then I was speaking to one of my wife's friends has a car, and it was up for renewal for car insurance, and they just couldn't get car insurance at all for this car. I think it might have been a hybrid. I can't remember if it was or not, but anyway, couldn't get insurance. And they actually had to go to the manufacturer out of exasperation to get insurance. And I've heard one or two of the wee reports about car insurances being really expensive. And I have heard people suggest that this might be down to EVs and whatnot. But I'd also heard there was a podcast I was listening to, and it was somebody talking from the insurance industry. They were saying that modern cars, just in general, have got so complex and have so many sensors and stuff and bumpers and stuff, that it just takes a minor prang on a bumper and it's thousands of pounds. I think that's attributing a lot to it. And then I also came across a video, which I've got a link to, I think, about, it was a chap talking about insurers abandoning high climate risk properties. So the over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, the insurance costs to the industry has been almost at the top end, upper of what they were expecting. And they're basically saying that their models that they'd predicted for the amount of need to pay out basically has been wrong, and they need to drastically rethink.
Right.
So, and they're just saying they're abandoning people, not insuring people, because they've lost so much money, and so that might also be being contributing to all these severe weather around the world. So that's full circle sort of thing.
I didn't quite appreciate it. I know my insurance just goes up and up and up and up every year for no apparent reason. It makes a certain amount of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. Because, I mean, you just need to, if you just scroll back through the news of all the flooding and the storm damage and all that, and it costs millions, billions, trillions, you know, so it's, somebody's got to pay for it. We've got to pay for it, I suppose.
And the business about cars being complicated and stuff, I've certainly had experience where some bit of electronics, some sort of sensor or something fails.
Yes.
I think it was something that detects the turning of your wheels.
Oh yes, that's fuel rotation sensors. ABS. That's right. Yeah,
doesn't work because it doesn't know what your wheels are doing.
That's right.
And when you put the brakes on, it judders and does bizarre things. Yeah. And it isn't, in my experience, it wasn't all that cheap. It wasn't massively expensive to replace it. But you know, it took a while to source the bits, to fit the bits and stuff. You know,
and I mean. I guess if your car's brand new, they're much more, because me and Dave don't have brand new cars. much more sophisticated, you know. And if you think about the cars, for example, what do you call it? There's a name for these if you're in cruise control, adaptive cruise control, you've got the LiDAR or whatever it is, and the sensor cars in front and whatnot, and so all that's very, very expensive. So
I noticed this even with my son's car. I think it's a Yaris, a Toyota Yaris.
Oh,
it's got the K cameras and stuff all over it. And we're sometimes when we go out to, for a meal or something together, I say, "Shall we take my car?" And he likes to drive it. But the last time he says, "Nah, I won't because he can't park it."
He's lost a skill for parking, isn't he?
The parking skill is... he much prefers the Yaris that shows him, you know, where he is in relation to everything else.
I'll tell you a funny story. There was a colleague at work who used to like to kind of, let's say, boast about his Mercedes. You know, got a Mercedes, you know. So I've just found out why these Mercedes drivers get a bad rap about, you know, parking in the middle of a parking spaces, because I was just putting my car into this ready for the space and hit the auto parking button and it rotated, the wheel rotated and all that, and it patched up just perfectly with that equal space between the car on the left and right. Unfortunately, that was down the middle of the line. So that's why they're doing it.
Wow, that makes a huge amount of sense, actually, doesn't it? Yeah,
equally spaced. Because
it doesn't know anything about the lines; it just knows about other vehicles. Wow. Yeah. That's fascinating. Yeah, like
of course,
that.
He was showing off as he was telling the story. Of course.
So, very good.
Very good. Yeah. So, what was your next thing on the?
I got the title on this thing is "I got a Steam Deck for Christmas!" Exclamation mark.
So I remember showing my age, I suppose. What exactly is a Steam Deck?
Well, I wasn't sure until I started doing the research. Right. Yeah. So here's the history. I'll answer that question in a minute. But I don't play games much. I have played games in the past. I used to play them on BBC Micropilot,
and
we used to do family Minecraft sessions at one point.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking it would be quite nice to get back into games a little bit. So my son said, "Oh, you can borrow my Nintendo Switch at the end of 2023 and see if I can get on with it, because the screens are relatively small. I mean, they're massive compared to the way they were, Game Boys and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I had a wee play with that. And I said, "Oh, yeah, I might get myself a Steam Deck in the next year." And lo and behold, for Christmas, I got a Steam Deck from them all. But so a Steam Deck is actually a small Linux computer.
Oh.
It's got all the controls. It's got a lot of controls on it for controlling your position and, buttons and everywhere your fingers go and joysticks and stuff like that. It's got quite a nice little screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's got sound capabilities. Mm-hmm. It's running Linux, as I said, but it's running Steam on top of Linux. Steam being the thing that will play lots of different game types. I actually set it up to run the Linux operating system directly the other day, just to see what it's like. It's great. It's a little handheld Linux box. It's quite fun. Yeah, people are using it for all manner of stuff, I think.
Mm, nice. Have a look at that.
I should have put it in the car. Yeah, the only comment was, well, I'm pretty bad at using it because I haven't been brought up with all of the control, with all the coordinations that are needed, you know, because old geezers on modern game machines is a bit ridiculous.
With a bit of Pong or maybe Space Invaders. <Yeah. laughs>
They bought me Stardew Valley for it, which is a... It is a thing where you're a character in a world, and you can move around and collect things and build things and stuff like that. So I'm practicing it, using it, and going, I want to go in that direction, but I seem to be going in the opposite direction. What the hell's going on? And I've got over that mostly. But there are various games I'd quite like to try out. Kerbal Space Program is one that's on my list, but unfortunately I missed it. There was a sale of it recently, and I missed it because I'm too slow. It's quite a fun thing for experimenting with space flight and this sort of stuff. In a simulation. So your
Steam box, is there like USB ports to put a keyboard on it or something, or how do you?
I think you can run a keyboard on it. Yeah, I've not tried that, I mean, it's meant. Yeah, you'd need that really to use it as a Linux box. I've certainly seen people saying, that they are currently developing software on a Steam Deck.
Wow.
So I assume that means they can plug a monitor into it and a keyboard into it and get a fairly pleasant little Linux engine. Obviously, it's got a battery in it, and you know, you charge it and all that good stuff. So
I was thinking, you know, because what I was thinking it was is some sort of a gaming thing like a for your telly, like an Xbox thing or something like that. My brother came not this Christmas but previous Christmas, and he came with this headset thing. Oh, is it an Oculus Rift thing? Is that what you call it?
Oh yeah,
I think it could have been that. So that was quite interesting. You know, I felt slightly kind of seasick at one point, but you feel a bit kind of, you know, it's a bit like seasickness almost. It was a bit like that. And you can see your hand, and you can pick up objects and stuff. It was quite interesting. But yeah, I thought that's kind of the sort of thing you were going to talk about. Yeah, not at all expecting that.
No. It's basically a sort of grown up version of Game Boys and Nintendo's. Yeah. And I mean, it's the equivalent in size and functionality to a Nintendo Switch.
Right.
I think. I speak as if I know stuff, and I don't.
I'll look that up when I get back. Yeah. I'll look at that. Yeah, very good. Very good. What was my next thing? So I don't. This is going to probably last about 30 seconds, or even maybe 15 seconds. So me and Mrs. X went to the Hunger Games. It's like a pre-sequel. You remember you know anything about the Hunger Games? Or
I know of its existence.
Katniss
Everdeen.
Yeah, and all that nonsense. So I actually got a bit of a ribbon, and I think I got quite a bad review. But actually, really enjoyed it. So that's about as fast as it goes.
So is that a movie?
It's a movie. Wife actually reading the book as well.
It was
a fun thing to go to. I mean, we also went to Oppenheimer as well. So that was quite good. I enjoyed that. I think wife found it a bit difficult to follow. And in fact, I was fortunate that I'd listened to a documentary about it, the background prior to it, and rather than it spoiling it, it added augmented the sort of thing some of the things that would be difficult to tell on screen. So I thought, you know, if unless you knew that background, you wouldn't know why they were showing you that. So at times I'd have to say, oh, that means this, and explain to them, I understand that.
with subjects like that, I don't think it's possible to spoil it much, because there's always aspects of the thing that you would have missed first time round. So filling in a bit of background is a good thing.
And of course, if you remember, there's Oppenheimer and the Barbie, sort of Barbieheimer. We didn't do both. However, my wife, she managed to get hold of a DVD, so we actually did end up eventually watching the Barbie thing as well. So it was a lot better than expected, because I thought it would be absolute rubbish.
I've not seen it. I don't know anybody.
Oh, you must do it.
Some quite positive comments about it. Saying what pretty much what you just said. I thought it was going to be awful, and it turned out to be quite
not too bad. So I think that's that.
Been to the cinema for years.
We hadn't either.
It was a nice thing to do.
So the next thing
we'd been talking about ticks. Was it the last time we recorded anything that we're talking about how ticks were becoming more prevalent?
Just looking out over the distance
into the hills there. Yeah. There's probably a fair number of ticks out there.
Have you ever had a tick bite?
A few times, I think. Walking in the Scottish hills.
But not
for a number of years, because you just need to take the right precautions wear. Yeah. Wear things that protect your calves and stuff.
I've not had one so far, but I don't fancy one at all. But
it's a pretty nasty thing. You suddenly look, what is that on my leg? Oh my god, it's one of the
tick.
You're not supposed to hoik them out. You're supposed to use a device for.
We've got a tool for them, because Winston's had a few.
That was why we were talking about it, wasn't it? Because I listen to weird and wonderful podcasts. I'd been listening to one about microbiology, and they were talking about a disease called alpha-gal syndrome, and it's been prevalent in the USA, but seems to be making its way to Europe as well, and it's caused by a tick bite. What it is the tick feeds on another mammal, like, you know, deer or something like that, and then it would bite you. And it in doing the first, the blood remover from whatever, it gets a carbohydrate, which is called galactose, alpha-1-3 galactose.
Ooh, easy for you to say. Okay.
And it's called alpha-gal. It's got an alpha in it. And what this does is that if it's injected into a human, and these are animals, the ticks are things that bite by first injecting an anticoagulant,
so the
blood doesn't clot as they're trying to suck it.
Right.
And they inject this alpha-gal into your bloodstream, and it becomes, it's a foreign substance as far as humans are concerned, and it causes allergy. And what this actually does, because the alpha-gal is found in red meat, then it means you're allergic to eating meat. Red meat, anyway. So, yeah.
Not so bad if you're a vegetarian, but if you're not...
It's quite surprising.
I wonder how it manifests itself when you actually, if you take meat. I mean, I wonder what sort of symptoms you have.
I didn't pay a huge amount of attention to it, but the impression I got was that you would get, you know, classic allergy symptoms. You know, like maybe breaking out into sort of boils or various hives or whatever.
I'm trying to pin that down to that. I mean,
Although I think it is, it's not so easily identified in Europe yet. I'm not sure that many medical practices are fully aware of it. Well, maybe I'm wrong though, but it seems to be. It's definitely quite common in the USA and Australia. And a few other places.
Two of the most meat-eating...
It's a fascinating thing. Yeah. Why are we allergic to it is the other question I didn't really write down here. It's because we do not produce this. It's found in other mammals, but higher primates and humans... We're higher primates, of course, don't produce it. So, as if it suddenly appears in the blood, then it's a foreign thing that needs to be dealt with, and that results in
because it obviously reacts to it the first time it gets it from the small amount that it gets from the tick, and it's so. Primed after that. Yeah, of course.
Yep,
wow.
Yep. I'll put this in the notes of the thing.
Hope I never get
maybe
that.
Put some links to things that explain it better than I did.
I mean, I don't take a huge amount of meat, but I'm certainly not a vegetarian. That would be a bit of an inconvenience, at least.
my kids used to be vegetarian, but they're not now. They quite like a bit of, but we don't eat a lot of meat.
Mainly
white meat, I guess, given the choice. But
is it present in fish?
No. It's a mammalian protein, mammalian carbohydrate that they produce. Not quite, quite sure what it's used for. Don't know much about it really. I just thought it was an interesting thing to highlight.
The next thing I've got again might only last for a bit. It feels like not very much has happened. It's just been the terrible weather. I think we might be at the cinema in that area, and we were trudging around some of the shops in the area, and we discovered quite by accident that Waterstones it's a bookshop here in the UK. I think it's across the whole UK, isn't it? It isn't just Scotland, it's in the UK, isn't it?
I think it's a national
thing. So it's got a cafe, at least the one we had, a cafe upstairs. I think they generally are upstairs. And so Mrs. X, she suffers from gluten intolerance. So we discovered that they've got gluten-free options. And on top of that, even more surprising, they've got they're dog-friendly. So for a four-legged companion, that's really handy. So I would never thought a dog could... I think when we were there, somebody came up with a dog. Thought, oh, look at that. You know, surely can't have a dog in here. And then they wandered back downstairs and watched him go to the checkout, and nothing was said. I thought, oh, that must be okay then. So we went down, we asked, you know, is it okay? Oh, yes, really? Oh, goodness. Okay.
That's really good, yeah.
So we've not used it with them yet, but or have we? Oh, no, we did. No, we have actually been there with them, so yeah. So that's always on the lookout for gluten-free dog-friendly establishments. Are quite rare, as you can imagine. You know,
especially for gluten-free dogs.
Yes, exactly.
That's really good. The pub we used to have lunch in for these sessions was dog friendly,
and there's gluten free options as well.
But I'm not sure about the one we've just.
I don't think dog friendly.
It doesn't look like it's very.
But they
dog
do have
friendly.
Gluten free options, but but it's not very often that we're out without our four legged companions.
But there are places around Edinburgh that do accept dogs.
I've got a list of anyone I find to keep a note of it. So.
Oh, very nice. Good.
Okay.
Next thing on my list is I'm trying to get back into Raspberry Pi stuff a bit more.
Yes.
I'd gone into the doldrums as far as Pis were concerned because things had failed on me. A disk had crashed. An SSD, I should say. The changeover from Raspbian to Raspberry Pi OS caused me some issues with things I was running. And I just went, I'm fed up with it. And anyway, I've been, since Christmas in January and February, I've been trying to coordinate all of my Raspberry Pis. And I do have quite a number of them. But the key ones, I bought a Raspberry Pi 5 last year, which arrived in December. And because I want to run my Pis with an SSD in all cases, and there's now the ability to boot off the SSD. We've been able to do it before, but in various ways that have not been all that convenient. The first time I did it, you had to run an SD card to do the booting, and then hand over to the SSD. So I had several setups like that, which worked. But now you can just ignore the SD card completely and just do everything from the from the SSD. So I've put an NVMe base from Pimeroni on this Raspberry Pi 5, and I put an NVMe M2 card.
I've not had any experience of these sort of things, and I was actually just saying to Dave earlier on that I've been extremely lucky because I use SD cards for all my Raspberry Pis. I've never ever had any fail or crash on me. My main Pi that's running 24/7. I recently copied some files. I've been suspecting this for a while, and I copied some files across to give to a colleague, and I was actually listening to some of them. They're audio files, and there was the odd gap and break in the audio, and I think that's bit rot. So things are actually, failing, and the files are actually failing on the SD. That's a problem with the SDs, I guess, really.
Yeah, I've not had that direct experience. I have had one SD card fail totally, but that was one of the early ones.
Right.
And I didn't know what quality of card to get, and it was the old-style large SD card. But I haven't had any of the others fail.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you put SSDs, if your SSD is on a USB 3, you get pretty reasonable speed. So, you can have a moderate amount of disk space there if you're trying to run something that maybe storing photos or keeping music on or something like that. It's not a bad setup. It's even better with the Raspberry Pi 5, which uses the faster interface, whose name escapes me.
I've generally got 128 gigabyte SD card, and then when it fills, it takes a long time to fill that up, and then just copy it across onto a hard drive and start again. That's what I tend to do,
I think you can manage. Depends what you demand.
Do with
really.
That site, yes, exactly.
It's a perfectly workable solution. What you're describing.
I'm kind of the same. I've got about just a little bit before I bought a Pi 4, and I was going to use that for... Well, I was actually going to use it under the TV as a media thing, but I had issues with the... So, although it was bizarre, it would it was a 1080p... I can't... Some resolution of video, it would actually play back a certain resolution of video a bit better, well, better than the previous Pi I had, but the lower resolution, it wouldn't.
Oh, that's right.
So I thought, well, that's just no any good at all. So it was the new distribution of the... What was it now? It was OSMC, do you call it? OSMC? Something like that. It's a media thing. It used to be XBMC thing. Something like that. It's one of those ones. One of these distributions, anyway, whatever it was. Mini XMBC. I can't know what it's called now, whatever it is.
I've lost track of these things.
I haven't updated it for ages. So I just... stuck with my old one and not bad. So I thought, well, what am I going to do with this for? So I thought I'd replace my aging Pi server that I was talking to you about, but it's finding the time but at least this way I've got two. I can have two running in parallel, and when I've got it all up and running, I can then just swap it across. So that's what I plan to do. You know, you were talking about Raspbian and what's it called, the one?
Raspberry Pi OS, they call
so
it.
So, was it the Raspberry Pi Foundation swapped from Raspbian to this Pi OS? Right, okay. So, the Pi OS I've got as well on my new Pi then.
There's quite a lot of differences as far as I can see. I had written a thing, I did a show about it, a script that would go and interrogate the Pi through the operating system to find out all the different parameters. So, you gave you a report saying this type of Pi has got this memory, But I think none of that works now.
Oh.
Because the way...
Everything shifted.
Everything, the commands to get it or the places to go and look for it have all changed. I've not... It's a thing on my to-do list to work out how to do that. Yeah. It's a little bit frustrating that things change quite as much.
Just a wee bit, yes.
I was just going to say, I've also got two 4B systems that I'm setting up, which I've had for ages, but I'm currently rebuilding them with the Raspberry Pi OS, and they're going to be used for all the various home lab. You know, there's this term home lab where you effectively build things where you have lots of services running, you know, from... your own DNS if you want, or you know, your own database in a fancy web server and all that sort of stuff on something, and you can put all of your information. You can run Nextcloud all the various things. I've got a list, but I can't seem to remember it because it's written down on a bit of paper and I haven't got it with me, but I'm planning to do that. And I've just been, before we met today, I've been installing Pi-hole on one of these machines, so I hadn't had Pi-hole for a while. So I'm trying to set that up at the moment. So that's going quite well.
Yeah, that'll be good. It's not a thing I've ever dealt with, Pi-hole, I must admit.
It's really quite satisfying to have it when I had it before.
Yeah.
And it was because you could see it blocking so much. And it was not only blocking things on my PC, but, you know, and the laptop as well, and everybody's phone when they were visiting and stuff.
So my next thing on the list, I kind of was thinking, I've mentioned this, I don't know how long we'll talk about it, but it seems such a long time ago, but we visited Blackpool. And it was quite late on in the year, and it was, of course, it was freezing cold, and it was blowing a gale, and it was decided to walk up down the promenade, so we were absolutely frozen. So I mean, at one point you're leaning at the wind so much that you know you thought you'd fall over. It was that bad, you know, and it was bitterly cold. Yes. And so I mean, we had a nice time, and we actually got a chance to go, and you know the it's like a big pumpkin thing. It was a horse and pony and trap, you know. I don't know what you call it now. It's you know, they do these things that are all lit up with fairy lights, and you can sit in them, and it's horse drawn carriage sort of thing.
Okay,
so that was nice. We've all got in that. That freezing, you know. So we said, because usually we did they go so far up the promenade and back down again, and somebody said, you know, excuse me, would you take us all the way back to the hotel? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, we'll just do a set route. And we asked another two or three, and we finally got somebody, and they said, oh yeah, well, I'll do that. So he took us in one direction, which was effectively the same distance, but just in one direction. Mm-hmm. And you know, he obviously picked somebody up at the other end, so it suited mm-hmm. him as well. But it was lovely, you know, to get back to the hotel on a horse drawn.
Yeah.
So that damn freezing. So,
yeah, yeah.
You
know, Blackpool's a funny place. It's I used to live further up the coast in Morecambe, which is another quite chilly place.
in the wrong direction. I can remember that. Yeah,
yeah. Hung out in Blackpool a few times. It's an interesting place. My kids like it because it's all the fun fairs and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. When we were there, we got the chance to go in a tram that was over 100 years old.
All right.
And that was nice. And yep. I was surprised because, well, the first thing you notice, there was a bus, I'm going to tangent here, I was on a bus museum thing in Edinburgh that they opened at certain times to look at the different buses and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And like the buses, when you look at the yesteryear buses and trams, they're tiny, you know, because people are so much smaller than they are today. And this tram was the same; it was really small and compact. Back to Blackpool again. So we got to the top deck, and it was what I thought was really clever is they had two slots on either side of the seat, and it meant you could take the backrest and push it forward,
mm-hmm.
and depending on which side it was on, it was facing the opposite direction. That's so clever, you know. You never seen like that on buses and stuff. And you can also have them so that you're facing a block of four sitting together, mm-hmm. or you can be facing the other way, mm-hmm. so you could complete flex. But I thought, that's so clever. It's probably because of health and safety. People can't really not do that sort of thing, I would imagine. But yeah, I thought it was really clever.
Yes, because if I remember right, I have been on this tram a long time ago because I took my kids for a holiday to Blackpool years and years ago when they were much younger, and we had to travel on the trams. Mm. But are they not sort of wooden slatted wooden seats? They were when we did it. It was like a sort of park bench type thing almost.
I think they were cushioned.
Oh, okay.
But they're quite thin cushions, to be fair.
Original were just sort of wooden benches. But
yes, that's okay.
You just put up with that sort of stuff.
The
trams are good, and it's quite nice to see these things trundling up and down.
Yeah,
along the promenade.
We weren't going to. I've got a section in Edinburgh Trams. I think we talked. We reckon we have talked to the Edinburgh Trams, mm-hmm. but they were because you gave me that tip, and it was mm-hmm. really good, really really efficient. But I think we don't really go over that again in case.
The Edinburgh Tram good.
Every 6 minutes and
no
getting held up by cars and stuff.
It's been built properly, so it's not. Well, they do say that if you are using public transport of any sort and it is dependent on the congestion of cars, then you haven't really got public transport. Yeah. You just got a sort of a big car, and it's not the same thing.
I've got to say, I was very sceptical. A bit sceptical. I hear everybody else is very sceptical. Well, I mean, mm-hmm. it's better than nothing. It's not, you know. But I thought, well, it doesn't go over anywhere particularly. But when I tried it, I thought, God, it goes all the way from one end of Edinburgh right out down to the bottom of Leith, and you can get off and on. There's lots and lots of stops that you can get off and on at, and it's so fast and efficient.
It's a delightful thing.
Really good, yeah.
And when you reach my age, you get free tickets.
Ah, of course, yes. I'm not that far away. that'll be fun.
When you get your card in the post. I can use the buses for free, and I can travel all over Scotland and go up and down the tram as many times as I want to.
If you don't ticket me before I get to that age, I think that was all for that one.
Good. So I think probably, well, the next one is my last really that I wanted to talk about today, which is just to highlight some changes that have happened on HBR, and it's down to Ken, who has added some stuff to the calendar page,
mm-hmm.
The place where you go to find a slot to add your show. There was a request for an overview of what was in the reserve queue,
mm-hmm.
and that's been added, so that's quite nice.
Yeah.
And
that somebody might have been me, and I've got a a Raspberry Pi, which used to display that information. And there used to be, what was there was a file on the old site, wasn't there?
There was a thing, statistics.php, that just came back with a text format thing.
Oh, is that what it was?
Which had like sort of labels and values and stuff on it, I think.
Yeah, this is it. So that's how I used to get the information. And it stopped working, of course, when the site was changed over. And I just happened to see, I don't suppose that, at the time it sounded like obviously something a very low priority for myself. I'm not bothered, but it would be nice if we could. And it sounded as if it was a bit awkward to do. And to my delight, Ken was able to incorporate that.
Yep.
So, and it's got there's loads of statistics. You should take a look at it. It's very good.
It's indexed from the calendar page.
I'm going to do a show in the near future, hopefully, with talking about the how I use that information, and I'll maybe cover the fields and stuff that are in that file as well, so it's kind of JSON file. But yeah, it's very good.
I think the issue with it was that the query that you need to apply to the database to get the data is quite an expensive one.
Right.
And since we're now running off an AWS instance, so it costs, I think every query will cost some number of micro pennies.
So rather than a query, it just puts out the JSON file and then you can just read it and interpret it.
Well, it refreshes the JSON every 15 minutes or something, so it's not on demand thing.
Yeah.
I think it says as much on the on the site.
Perfect, absolutely.
Yeah,
perfect.
That's that's really good.
Yeah,
so it's
very much appreciated, Ken.
It's nice
appreciate
to
that.
See these things moving forward.
Absolutely. As I say, I was just coming out this morning and I flipped my Raspberry Pi on it. And I said, there are 15 slots in the queue, so you know, okay, my mouth.
It's good. I've been doing that sort of thing for years and years because I get notifications to say somebody's just sent in a show and a red light comes on and then another one that says Ken's processed the shows, they're ready to go on the Internet Archive site another colour LED lights up.
Yeah.
So all of those sorts of things are
very handy.
quite useful to do. Yeah. So,
So was that was your last
one? That was my last one, yeah.
So the only thing I've got is, and I don't think it's going to take up very much time, it was a topic which I was listening to one of Clatu's shows, and I think I'm quite a bit behind his most recent show, so I mean it was probably a long time ago as he recorded that show, about TLDR. So TLDR, I don't even know what it stands for, but it's a kind of community, I think it's a community built improved help system, from what I understand. And his complaint was, well, you know, the help on Linux is atrocious, and if I should be type help on it, you get no help whatsoever. It's awful, you know.
Actually, so, that's not entirely true, because I think at least I'm not sure if it's all Linuxes that offer a help, but if you type help and then some bash command.
But you need to know about that command in the first place.
You do. There's not a thing that says, so you want to find out about bash, do you? Well, start here. No, there's nothing like that.
So that's the point you're making. You know,
but the help thing, if you want to find out how a particular weird bit of bash works, you can do man bash. But then you have the most enormous man page to scroll through. If you type help that thing, there's a good chance that you will get some quite condensed and useful notes.
So I must try that.
If you're interested, say test, for example.
Yep.
The test command, which is also the square brackets around things. Double square brackets.
It is for it,
You will find, if you do help test, you'll find some quite useful things there.
Right.
I only stumbled over that within the past couple of years and use it a fair bit. So
I think that there's a package which you can install. I'm guessing it's called TLDR, but there's also a website.
Okay,
which is an online instance of it which you can try out, and I think it certainly covers Bash, but I think it covers other languages as well.
Okay.
So
that's good.
It did look very nice, but the point is, it's got lots and lots of examples.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's what that means,
because
that's one of the points at Clatu made. You know, examples. You know, you're looking at something. What does that actually mean? Once you get examples, that makes sense.
Oh yes. Just reading the text. For, you know, under X conditions, Y happens.
Yep.
It's all very well, but it's hard to visualise what that really means.
Examples are
critical.
So that's good stuff. Good stuff.
TLDR will be TLDR. Too long. Didn't read. I think.
No. Oh, maybe. I have no idea.
Probably is. Yeah.
Too long.
Yeah.
Didn't read. Yeah. I guess I was well done.
Which is a good name.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff.
So.
Yeah, I think that's.
I mean, there's a lot on this.
Yeah.
This shared document that we manage, but.
Yeah.
But. I mean, we're already
45 minutes,
and so we'll be trimming that back a bit. But I think that's enough.
I think so.
That's enough.
So. Yeah, so. I would say so.
All right then. Well,
it's been great as always. And,
yeah, it's nice to have a hangout with another HBR host.
Absolutely.
And find lots of things to talk about.
If any of you are in Scotland, you know.
Well, yes. Yeah. Ken himself was in Scotland, and we did meet up with him last year. And was in last year. That was really
excellent.
Really nice.
Very nice. Yes, aye.
But we didn't record a show about it.
No,
because too much else going on.
Yes, indeed.
So.
Aye.
All right. Yeah. Well, so, thanks everybody.
Yeah, thanks everybody. Yeah,
we'll speak to you again sometime.
Speak to you soon, hopefully, if I can get my finger out and get organised. Bye, everybody.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HBR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.